Hello and welcome to the Football New South Wales Community Podcast. In February, Football New South Wales held its inaugural Club Development Conference at Valentine Sports Park, with over 150 representatives from 81 clubs taking part in the day's workshops and discussions. Over the coming weeks, we'll be releasing community podcast episodes featuring numerous Club Development Conference sessions. If you're keen to view the video presentations, visit the Football New South Wales Club Hub to access the resources as they are added. In this episode, our panel tackles the topic of player and spectator behaviour. Hosted by Adam Peacock, the panel features Tom Emelaeus from Northwest Sydney Football Referees Association, Angelica Georgopoulos from Sydney Olympic FC, and Aaron Dibden, Head of Community and Member Services for Football New South Wales.
Please welcome to the stage Tom Emelaeus from Northwest Sydney Referees Association, also Angelica Georgopoulos from Sydney Olympic FC and Strathfield FC, and Aaron Dibden from Football New South Wales to talk about spectator behaviour. So please welcome to the stage. Hello. It's two mics between three, so yeah. Sorry about that. Firstly, from a Football New South Wales perspective, Aaron, just explain your role inside it and what comes across your desk.
Can you hear me? Yep. Excellent. Hi, everyone. I'm Aaron Dibden. I'm the Head of Community and Member Services here at Football New South Wales. And I'm pretty much the contact point between all the member associations and the company. I'm trying to make sure that our associations are able to run good competitions and provide a good service to all of our member clubs. And that means that we help out with things like providing template grievance and disciplinary regs, which all of our associations would have just received earlier this week. And we provide advice to make sure that the associations can kind of get through their disciplinary processes in a good, effective and fair way. So we can sort of make sure that we balance the needs of our clubs and our participants, but also the needs of our association to be able to run good competitions.
Angelica, to you. So not just one club, you're not busy enough, you decided to kind of be across two. Your role inside that and obviously officiating as well.
Yeah, so I'm at Sydney Olympic as the administration manager, so I get all the fun phone calls and the fun emails that we all love. And I've been the junior vice president for Strathfield Football Club for the last 5 years, and I've held that role. Unfortunately, I've had to step down from that now, just taken a position on the board of Football Canterbury. So, yeah, we love football here.
Yes, football nut. And Tom, I mean, it's no real surprise what your role is. You're involved in the Referees Association. So, mate, let's get the discussion going about this topic, about what you see, what you get reported back to you in your little pocket of Sydney, or big pocket of Sydney, I should say, and player behaviour as opposed to spectator behaviour. What are we talking about here on a weekend basis?
So usual gamut of things that I'm sure most associations see, and you will get poor player behaviour. It's people are passionate about the game. It's what happens after that. We see everything from the day-to-day discipline things through to things that result in life bans, fortunately not that often. What's critical, though, is how you respond to that. And fortunately, we've got a pretty close association with our local football body and involved in the GPT process and so on. But it's not just about the reactive side after there's been problems. It's some of the proactive things we do to try and improve respect and so on in the game so that it's more enjoyable for all participants.
We'll get into some of those things that people in this room can utilise and get around. But, I mean, I'm sure there's everyone in this room has had some kind of report come back on a Monday as if to say he or she did what, as in player or spectator did what. But we'll get to the proactive stuff as well, but have you got similar tales?
Yeah, look, it's all about learning and growing and making the mistakes. And I think when people understand the nature of refereeing, they will become a lot more soft to referees. I can guarantee you, and I'm sure Tom can attest to this, the referees get hounded at their association level when they make a mistake. They get told by their people, by their mentors, by everyone around them in the association world and referee world. They don't need to hear it from a parent or from a club personnel because they know. So I think it's really important to know that they're growing, and a lot of the time they are underage. A lot of the time they're 15, 16, 13, even I think some of the younger ones. it's a role that is inherently about, unfortunately, copping abuse. You are always going to be the bad guy in someone's eyes. And I think once you understand that, you'll become a little bit more lenient to their decisions.
Yeah. And from Football New South Wales' perspective then, so what do you see, as the governing body, you can't be across all these issues. If they're really serious, they end up with you perhaps. But what's your advice to feed into the local areas about player behaviour, spectator behaviour?
Probably the biggest thing is just making sure that we can set expectations. So we need to make sure that people have a good understanding of what's okay on a football field and what's not. And our rules and regulations will be built in a way that sort of sets those expectations and enforces them. When the expectations aren't met, we then have a set of tools that we use to deal with the people who are sort of stepping outside the bounds. So, you know, we have things like codes of conduct, and everyone should be reading their codes of conduct and circulating the codes of conduct, because they sort of, they set those ideals of behaviour where simple things like we respect the referee's decision. You know, it's really simple, and we understand that people can make mistakes. We be fair to people. We play within the rules wherever possible. Like, we play hard but fair. These things are all about that expectation setting and setting a culture that goes, you know, from Football New South Wales to associations to clubs to teams. Because ultimately it's the teams out on the park that need to sort of live this behaviour. At Football New South Wales, we can have, you know, administrators making certain decisions and giving pronouncements from on high. At association level, we can give pronouncements. Like, I've been an association GM as well, and there is a limit to your powers. But what you can always do is communicate what the standards of behaviour ought to be and set those expectations. And then you expect that those expectations are set right down to team level, and you expect that people will follow them, and then you have tools to deal with it when they don't.
Tom, what's the churn rate for referees in your area?
Yeah, look, our area is fairly typical, and I was just reading a statement on Tuesday from Football Australia's CEO that 40% of referees don't come back every year. And drilling down into that a little bit more, we know that 50% of our first years throw it in. Most of them don't even complete the first year. And people don't realise, you know, you wouldn't abuse a 14-year-old kid walking down the street, but they've got a referee's kid on, their fair game. You know, have a crack at them for that under 12 offside or whatever it was. So it doesn't take much, especially for a young, you know, junior referee to get scared away from the game and throw it in. And that's, you know, the upshot of that is you just end up with less and less experience. You don't give referees the chance to develop and so on. So that's what we try and fight hard against. But look, I've been involved in this for over 3 decades and that churn rate hasn't changed.
Wow. Yeah, it's concerning because, during COVID, kids worked out that they can have as much financial benefit from flipping burgers or whatever like that than refereeing when games weren't happening. It's much easier that way. What do you see as well with, is particularly female referees, about how they feel about walking out onto a pitch early on? Because they are going to make howlers. They are going, like players, that open goal. Players are going to miss an open goal. Referees are going to make a decision. You look at it and you go, how on earth have they not seen that? But it is going to happen. So what can be done, Angelica, to kind of help that process?
I think it's acknowledging as well, a lot of women can probably relate to this, we tend to be perfectionists. And so I think the biggest problem with female referees is getting that concept out. I'm not going to get this 100% right. If you're a referee and you get something 100% right in a game, can you find them and point them in my direction for my games, okay? So inherently, I think women tend to be more concerned about being perfect 24/7. And I think it's about getting that out of our system of, hey, like, you're going to probably only get 80% of this game right, and that's okay, because that 20% is where the association, the referee association comes in, and that's where you learn, that's where you grow. So really advocating that referee isn't about getting it right 100% of the time, about advocating the fun of refereeing, the empowerment you get as a referee, and especially for women who want to kind of step into the game but maybe don't have the passion of playing or coaching, but they want to be a part. And a lot of those girls know a lot about the game but just feel very scared to come forward and say, hey, I want a referee, where do I go? So making sure that there's a channel or a pathway where it's easy for them to approach someone and say, hey, I want a referee, what do I do? We have to make it as simple as possible. Don't overcomplicate it. See this person, talk to this person. And I mean this nicely, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but they're not going to be more inclined to see an older guy who's been there for 50 years or so, they need some young people present on the ground that they can talk to. And that's not anything to say about old people. I love them. They're full of knowledge, okay? But it's actually about being accessible. And if you are an older person who is very talkative, that's great. You need to be talkative. You need to be on the ground and just be a point of reference and say, hey, is anybody interested in roughing? It has to be easy.
How do you get the message across to your young referees who may be wavering about, you know, they've copped abuse from players? And sometimes I feel like the players are the least likely, if you know what I mean, because they're in the game. And yeah, a couple of weeks ago I was at a game, just a side note, and a referee refereeing a NPL first grade game, he just went over to the players who were having a bit of push and shove, and he goes, righto, guys, put your freaking handbags away, stop carrying on like a bunch of little children and get on with it. And he added a couple of words that I probably shouldn't say on stage. And the players just looked at him and went, oh, yeah, right, mate, cool, no worries, and walked off. It was very effective. So I'm not suggesting that your 14, 15-year-old rocks up to do that when he goes to referee the ALs, but how do you kind of get across to your young referees about, you know, stick with it and it will get better?
Yeah, so first of all, we do give them some techniques right from day one that we know will help deal with it. So if you've, you know, let a tight offside go and it's gone through to goal and they're all turning around having a go at you, just tell them number 8 kept them onside and everyone has a go at number 8. And if you're not sure, just pick one. You've still only got one player having a go. So techniques like that, they can learn from other refs. But really important is support. So we, like in our association, we've got a junior vice president who's not an old person. They're usually about 20, 21, half a dozen years experience. And we make sure they introduce themselves, at least electronically, to all our new juniors as a point of contact. And then we're very careful. Saturday night, as the reports start coming in, sometimes official reports, other times emails, phone calls, any hint of a referee having had a hard time, we're in touch with them, mentoring them, supporting them as quickly as we can. And if I can just give one really quick anecdote on that, a number of years ago, young fella up at Arcadia Oval literally went home in tears at halftime on under-9s game. Would have been the end of his refereeing, I suspect, and we spent quite a bit of time with him and his mum and developed him. He's been on the A-League the last 5 years.
Oh, wow. Can you name him?
Carney Robinson.
Oh, cool. Good stuff. Good story. Aaron, we've seen things like, and people in this room probably have them up, but things, it's like just that little message about these are kids, refereed by kids, this is not the World Cup, stop treating it like the World Cup. Signs like that, put it next to the canteen, hopefully people see them and they can see through their own rage that might be building and take out their weekly frustrations on some kid. But any other ways you can get ahead of the game in terms of messaging before games, around games?
I think this sort of comes down to the clubs, you know, comes back to having the clubs sort of set their own culture and set their own expectations. This is how we're going to treat referees. Because I remember when I was at association level, I was GM of the Eastern Suburbs Football Association, and clubs would contact us and they'd say, why can't you get more referees? Like, you know, snap your fingers and make these referees appear. And it just doesn't work that way because the referees don't show up if they're having a bad time. So if the clubs are behaving well and the clubs are setting a good environment, then it makes it so much easier to attract the referees and ensure the referees are having a good time. And referees know when they make mistakes. Referees are their own worst critics. And the second worst critics are other referees. And that's before you get to the players. So the players absolutely don't need to be getting into the referee and making them have a crap time because that will make them go. You know, because they're already beating themselves up and their neighbouring referees are probably giving them a character assessment as well. And so if you've got players getting on top of them as well, especially if it's a first-year referee who might not have had the opportunity to make a mistake and learn from it and come back and referee again, then we will lose them. One of my favourite referees in the Eastern Suburbs used to always, you know, I was playing just all-age stuff in the Eastern Suburbs. He'd give a team talk at the start of the game and he'd go, you guys are all going to make mistakes. If you weren't making mistakes, you'd be playing at Old Trafford. I'm going to make mistakes. If I wasn't making mistakes, I'd be refereeing at Old Trafford as well. So everyone just needs to calm down a little bit and go, this is park footy. We're here to enjoy ourselves and all of us are going to make mistakes. Let's just get on with it, play the whistle.
Angelica, can you resonate or expand on that from your perspective?
Yeah, I think language is a really important thing that a lot of clubs need to instill at the top level. Like anything, monkey see, monkey do. If you're talking bad about referees in a club, and I know we've all done it, all right, fully guilty myself, even as a referee, It's really important how you speak about referees in front of other people filters right down. And so if you're talking in a negative light, that's just carrying it out. And there's always going to be that one guy in the back that's always mouthing off about the referee. That's inherent, okay? But they then become outliers if everybody else's language is positive. Because like we said, they are learning. They're already getting told what they're doing wrong. They're getting assessed. Anthony over here in the crowd has always assessed me on every game I ever did. And he was telling me, even when I thought I did everything right, I was like, that was the best game ever. Anthony would come over and say, you did this wrong. And I was like, ugh. So they're getting told. So language is really, really important.
Tom, as well, maybe from a parent's perspective or a coach's perspective about, you know, making sure that the player isn't having their head infiltrated with yelling or abuse from the sideline. So how do you turn the tap off on that?
Yeah, leadership's absolutely crucial. So club leadership's important. Team leadership is even more important because they're the ones there on the day. And that's not just the coach and manager, but the captain of the team and parents on the sideline. And the clubs that do it the best, that then end up, you know, getting the best coverage and the referees enjoy going there and so on, are the ones that stamp on issues straight away. So don't be the silent parent or coach on the sideline when someone's misbehaving. You deal with it. So the referee doesn't have to. And similarly, as the captain, you know, one of your players is getting in under the ref skin, you deal with it before you go down to 10 men. Look, good referees will work with captains like that. And we find that the biggest issues are when they've let the dickhead be the captain.
What about from a, say, down the line, so a governance structure in terms of, you know, committees hearing suspensions and what kind of punishment you might get? What advice would you give to people in the room about making sure those structures are in place so that any punishment that needs to be handed out is in place with what has taken, so there's not people getting off light, and conversely there's not been people chucked in Long Bay for 3 years for something that might have been a six-weeker?
Yeah, really good question, and I don't know about other associations. We've certainly aligned directly with Football New South Wales GPT guidelines, which obviously helps when things are appealed and so on. And they're pretty good. A lot of good minds have gone into developing those. And I'm always surprised when clubs come back and say, look, I can't believe they got 4 weeks for that or something. The suspensions are determined by the clubs, not by the referees. So there's almost a very detailed lookup table of what people will get if they do this and so on. And then there's a fairly, well, as objective as it can be, process to determine where each incident fits on that. And I think that the key then that sometimes gets missing is transparency. So associations need to perhaps depersonalise the outcomes. They don't say which club and which player, but a player in the all-age did this and this was the outcome. And that raises awareness that it's a disincentive for others to do the same.
Where are those guidelines available? Just on the website, yep?
Yeah, so that's the Football New South Wales Grievance and Disciplinary Regulations. So they're available in the resources section of the Football New South Wales website. Also, each association has been sent a marked up copy of the Grievance and Disciplinary Regulations. If they want to adopt those regs, they can. A number of associations have, like Northwest Sydney Football has in large part adopted those regulations. They're pretty widespread, and as Tom says, the schedule of penalties is really clear. You can work out from a referee's report where a particular offence is going to sit. I mean, sometimes it takes a bit of debate, but you can find out roughly where it's going to get, and you can kind of price up an offence. And if someone in your team has just done something really stupid, and you think that the report's going to outline a particular type of conduct, you can start working out how many weeks you're going to be missing them for. So those things are there, and people should look at them, certainly before they start complaining to referees, oh, I can't believe someone got 6 weeks for something. No, the rules are set. Like, there's a process for dealing with these things. Associations are generally really good at walking these things through their processes and making sure the correct outcome happens. We don't get that many appeals come through. So we do this properly, and we make sure that the associations do them properly.
How did you, though, deal with the one last year? I'm pretty sure it's not on the list. There was one in an NPL game last year with a player got sent off, and he actually went into the referee's room and just started walking around went into the referee's room, which pretty no, when the game's still going on, by the way. Now, old mate, he's never going to be a good crim because the VO was actually set up on the far side of the ground. It was looking straight across the ground right into where the referee's room was, with where you could see him open the door, walk in for 30 seconds and then walk back out again. So not the cleverest bloke in the world, but like unusual situations like that, it even covers things like that?
I can't speak specifically to that matter because I don't have any knowledge of that. The regs are written in a way that you can basically look, you look at a particular set of behaviours and you sort of see, you know, this fits here, and there may be multiple charges. So if someone, you know, if someone gets sent off for a bad tackle and then gives a referee a character reference on the way off and then starts having a go at the opposition benches, you can start stacking up the offences. And there are the table of offences is quite large, so there's something to describe almost everything.
They do have a couple of catch-alls in there, so that'd be an easy misconduct.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. What about coaches as well, Angelica? Like, at how... Because they're emotionally invested, about 95% of them, way too emotionally invested in a game, pretty much. What's the best way for an association or a club to tell coaches, oi, just, we know you want to win, we know you want to have a great time by winning, how do you just... take the foot off the gas.
Yeah, so obviously that starts to get a little bit more problematic as you become more elite in the football space. But I think education is really important. I think you'll be very surprised how many coaches are out there who actually have no idea about the guidelines, about the rules, about the regulations, about the policies. You'll be very surprised how many don't know how many weeks you get if you do X, Y, Z on a field. So I think if the coaches are across that, you'll find their behaviour immediately starts to back away and they then become more compliant. But I think a lot of the time they get away with it because they actually don't know. And I am going to say that some of them are a bit ignorant and want to just stick to football and their team and this. But I think it should be in there at least some sort of form of education when they're coming into a club saying, hey, have you read the guidelines? Are you aware if you do this, if you do that, you're going to get X, Y, Z? And I think you'll find a lot of them don't actually know that. But as of course, the elite space becomes more and more, you're always going to have that competitiveness. You're always going to have the parents who are pushing the coach to achieve something. And that's a whole other can of worms. So it's really important that the coaches also feel like they have some sort of support. Because if they actually don't know, they need someone in the club to say, hey, can you let me know about X, Y, Z? So it's about being transparent. It's about being creating a path for our coaches to have some sort of support network.
Tom, one of the last ones for you is some proactive measures. Any other proactive measures that we haven't mentioned up here that clubs or associations can use to get ahead of the game in, from what you've seen in your experience in this space?
Yeah, Northwest Sydney has a fair play award and it's completely statistically driven, so it's not subjective. There's probably about 3,500 incidents, if you count a yellow card as an incident, in a season of 18,000 players. And so we just do a ratio. They're basically weighted to create a total and do a ratio against the number of games and therefore rank the clubs. And I think I've been encouraging, and the association's been fairly receptive to giving that a fair bit of weight at their AGM, announcing it, seeing how people go with that, because it's a crucial piece of feedback on what's working and what's not. And then we take that a step further. So I've had a number of clubs since then contact me and say, hey, where did we finish and why? So I might say, you know, you guys were 15th, you're only mid-table, but if I drill into your 1,200 players, here are the 10 that stopped you being in the contention for the award. And it's often as little as that, you know, and if they know from that data, listen, we've got these handful here that we've got to work with, or it might be one team, they can address that, and we've seen a lot of success with that. And it can just be putting guidelines around, you know, if you're coming back this year, this is what we expect, or in the worst case, you know, you use your discipline processes to prevent them registering again.
Good stuff. Has anyone got any questions at all about this particular subject and referees and how to deal with clubs and all of that? Yes, one in the middle there. We might get the... I know we've got all the mics up here, actually. So, yeah, just yell it out and I'll repeat the question if you can. So, from a risk management perspective, who's the most effective person to go through?
The most offending.
Oh, most offending. Okay, yeah. Who's the worst?
Players.
Are they? I would have thought coaches. There's more players, I guess, isn't there?
Particular age group?
Yeah, age group and gender.
Gender, great question. The worst behaving female division in our area got a better score than the best behaving men's last year, so that ticks that box for you.
What a shock.
And then, yes, in terms of overall performance, generally the more competitive the leagues, the more incidents there are. That might also be because there's more experienced referees, so there's people getting away with less. But I would say the more social it is, generally the better it is.
Do you provide the refs, by the way, for Spirit NPL?
Oh, that sounds like a trick question. A lot of them will come from our area.
Yeah. No, I just got some cash in the car. I'll flip you to you later. No, I was playing later on. So I wouldn't do anything like that. That happens in Eastern Europe only. Any more questions? Is there one down the front? Yes, just from over here. We'll wait for the mic.
You said like there's a table that shows offences and how long they get suspended. Is there something like that for us to help with our parents? So they're not technically, like they can't get suspended from playing a game, but in our area, they're normally the biggest offenders, going at the refs, going at the players. So how do we sanction them without putting their child, you know, how affecting their child?
Look, that's a really terrific question. It gets to one of the hardest things that we have in club management. And so within the regulatory structures of football, a player is always able to be captured under the jurisdiction of our judiciary processes because they're a registered person. And so they or their parent have agreed that they'll be bound by the rules and regulations of the association, the club, etc. Spectators are hard to reach because they may not necessarily have personally agreed to those rules and regs. And, you know, in a previous job, I remember bringing an appeal to Football New South Wales. Well, it was found that certain people got off penalties that had been applied to them because they hadn't actually personally registered. And so that's really problematic when you have that jurisdictional issue of not being able to sort of grab someone and go, you've done this, and so I'm going to suspend you. And there are ways you can manage this by doing things like requiring, say, that the parents of any individual child that register for your club will sign a code of conduct. And you agree that you've signed this code of conduct, this is the standard of behaviour you're going to be held to, and the consequences for breaches of this code may include that you are suspended from, you know, you're not allowed to attend matches. And you can take that all the way up to saying repeated breaches of this code of conduct may include, consequences for repeated breaches may include, well, deregister your child. And so that way you're sort of claiming that right to say, this is really not on, you can't do this. Repeated offences are going to be taken, you know, really seriously. And that way, it's also just a way of saying, right at the very start of the season, when the kid shows up, the parents know what they should do. They know what's expected of them. And so that expectation setting exercise is really useful at a club level, but collectively it goes right up to the association as well, because the association doesn't want to be seeing matters where a parent's been a dickhead on the sideline. Because what's meant to be happening is the kids are meant to be out there having fun. Like, I don't know if this is a surprise to anybody, but football's meant to be fun. So people go and chase the ball and they try to put it in the back of the net, but they're meant to be having fun. And the parents are meant to, honestly, keep shtum. Like they should let the coaches do their job, let the kids enjoy themselves. If they stop doing that, the clubs do need to have tools to deal with that. And things like a code of conduct, it's a useful tool for bringing those parents under the jurisdiction of the club such that they can then be dealt with if they do the wrong thing.
Sorry, just to jump on that, if you have a spectator that isn't necessarily affiliated to a team or a player, might be a relative, so they're definitely not a member of the club, the best process is to make sure you have your ground official and let them deal with it, escort them away. If it starts to escalate, that's when you bring the police in. And I think that's just the formal process, especially if it is a spectator, you have no idea who they are, who the hell are they? You ask them politely, you implement your formal process with the ground official or club personnel, and then if it doesn't get any better, that's when you call the police.
Any more, or we can... Oh, one down here. Yep.
To Tom, been a long time. How critical, and I ask this question because I'm probably in the box seat here, from my point of view, being a secretary of an organisation who's been represented here today as well by the CEO and the general manager, how critical, from a referee's point of view and from your point of view as the president and or secretary, is the working relationship with your football association?
I think I got most of that, Tony. So you're asking how critical is the relationship with the football association? Yeah. Absolutely fundamental. Because, well, in some associations, they're integrated, but let's talk about the ones where they are two separate bodies. You're both there for the same reason, to help 15, 18,000 people enjoy their weekend football. And you've got different roles in achieving that, but you have to be hand in hand in doing it. So when it's working well, as ours is these days, you've got very strong support from the football body for the referees. You've got clubs being encouraged to put forward their members as referees, clubs reacting quickly when there's issues with refs. And similarly, you've got referees showing respect both ways. And that's probably something we haven't mentioned in this conversation, but respect's a two-way street. So we encourage our refs up front, you know, acknowledge that these people are here to play football as well. It's an emotional game. You know, don't just shut yourself off and tell them to shut up and go away. You might say to a player, okay, mate, you've had your say, no more. And something as simple as that shows a huge amount of respect and de-escalates things quickly. So from all levels, from your association management down to your individual refs and players, we encourage as close a relationship as possible. And that seems to help everyone enjoy their football.
We're going to wrap it up there. So please thank, once again, Aaron, Angelica and Tom for having a word there.
We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Be sure to check out the Football New South Wales Club Hub for the session video and many more club resources available. Otherwise, look out for more of our club development conference sessions over the coming weeks.